Thanks for listening to Chicago's Morning Answer podcast, sponsored by Signature Bank. Signature Bank takes pride in helping customers grow their business and provide unmatched banking expertise, custom financial solutions, and the industry's best technology. So whether you're a business looking for a deposit relationship or needs a ready source of financing, Signature Bank is the right bank for you. Call today at 773-467-5600 to hear how Signature Bank can help your business grow and thrive. Member FDIC, Equal Housing Lender.
This is Chicago's Morning Answer with Dan Proft and Amy Jacobson on AM 560, The Answer.
Top of the morning, Dan and Amy. I know you've moved on from COVID, but that doesn't mean your governor has, at least if you live in Illinois. This little reported development last week, Governor Pritzker signed another 30-day executive order declaring Illinois in a state of emergency, declaring Illinois a disaster area per COVID. That is 31 straight months of 30-day emergency orders. Let me cede my time to our friend Ted Dabrowski at Wire Points to do some Pritzker-splaining.
Governor Pritzker has once again declared Illinois a COVID disaster area. That disaster declaration allows Governor Pritzker to mask your kids, close businesses and schools, and force vaccinations. The governor has given himself these powers for more than two consecutive years with no sign of stopping. He's ruling by executive order, meaning no checks against his rules. Illinois, a disaster area? Today?
Miskey Park, concert venues, right.
Did Illinoisans not get the memo? Why isn't House Speaker Chris Welch challenging Pritzker's executive orders? And where is Senate President Don Harmon? They have no right to lament threats to democracy if they fail to challenge Pritzker's abuse of power. As long as this disaster proclamation goes uncontested, Governor Pritzker retains his unjustified control over Illinoisans. Share this video to let Pritzker know he must end his disaster declaration now.
312-642-5600, turnkey.pro answer line, 646-36-DA, turnkey.pro text line. You know, it's sort of a process thing. Hard to get people whipped into a frenzy about ending your unilateral disaster orders that give you these powers where you can circumvent and superimpose your will on the General Assembly, particularly when the General Assembly lies down on the job. It's sort of a process argument, but I mean, it has real world implications. And you should take notice that this guy wants to retain the powers that he conferred to himself illegitimately, yeah. One would argue, over the last 2 years and extend them indefinitely. And as Ted points out in that piece, and here you have these same people running around about saving our democracy, yeah, so you can have one Spalding rule in states like Illinois.
I mean, for 2.5 years, there were no three branches of government. There was him, the executive, and that was it. And he does not want to lose this power at all. And for 2.5 years, if it saves one life, put on this mask. If you don't, you're selfish, you don't care. Now we're going to be killing 50,000 babies a year. I mean, it just makes your head spin. Well, no, it's all about the children, Dan, because that's what it's been, all about the children. If you don't wear this mask, you're going to kill the children. He's just a hypocrite. I'm so sick of the Democrats. They're hypocrites. Couldn't have funerals. But then George Floyd dies. And wow, look at all the funerals they had for him. All the rules were off the table for certain people in certain situations if it helped the Democrat Party.
No, and the implications of the response engineered by the COVIDians continue to be felt, you know, by real Americans, including Americans who serve our country.
Oh, this is
The military, Army cuts pay and benefits from 57,000 unvaccinated National Guard and reserves.
Yep. You'll lose your pension. You'll lose your benefits. That's a serious thing.
So we're beyond the propaganda of pandemic of the unvaccinated because of what we've seen.
Well, look at Chuck Schumer, double boosted. So four shots in and he has COVID right now.
Yeah, or Tony Fauci or any number of, I don't know, hundreds of thousands, millions of people. But yet the mandates and the punishments continue, you know, right? The
July 15th is the deadline for CPS. If you're not vaccinated, then you cannot have your job in the fall.
Right.
That's
the beating,
this Friday.
The beatings will continue until morale improves is the approach here with these COVIDians. And so I know that among the general election electorate that Pritzker still gets relatively high marks for his handling of the pandemic. But I think upon a little bit further reflection, and if you can resist the temptation to just be done with it, it's behind us now. It's not behind him. And it's not behind a lot of people that are still feeling the impacts of people that want to lord over them and their health decisions. And you can play that game about health decisions both directions, too, for those pro aborts out there. Of course, the difference from my direction is we're talking about a health decision that impacts only one life, not that impacts two lives with only one person getting to make the decision. That's the difference, you see. But nonetheless, you would think if you're willing to indulge privacy and autonomy for health decisions when you talk on the issue of abortion, you think you'd be able to do it when it's one decision that impacts one person. But alas, the consistency, that's never quite present.
312-642-5600, turnkey.pro. Answer line 64636, type in DA, then a quick comment.
Marvin in Burlington, Wisconsin.
Well, good morning. Hope it's a start to a good week for everybody, you guys especially. I need your sensible voice every morning. This is the big lie. This is the big lie. And it's been perpetuated on society for decades now. Anytime the government in Washington is working against its own people, I mean, they consistently, every chance they get, will take authority, keep it, hold on to it for any reason they can fabricate. And this is eventually what happens. I mean, people are going to revolt. And, you know, no one has any faith in the newspapers because they don't do the job. They don't write intelligently about really what's going on. They have no faith in the FBI, the CDC. We have no faith in anything. Anything that comes out of the government, and including state governments and city governments. And I tell you, this is a recipe for disaster. We may not live to see it, but if we keep going down this road, we're going to totally implode, is my view.
Thanks,
and
for,
I don't, I agree.
Thanks for the call, Marvin. On the good news front, despite what you said about CPS, in L.A., an L.A. County judge ruled that the school district does not have the authority to mandate COVID-19 vaccinations.
Really?
Yes.
I wonder if that's going to happen here. I mean, you can get a religious or medical exemption, but it's hard because then you have to hire an attorney and all this. So I know some teachers that are just, I'm done.
Yeah, it's more,
because there's no more test to stay come July 15th.
That's not the legal issue. The mandate in L.A., in order to attend school, all eligible students, 12 and older, had to present proof of vaccination. Those who didn't comply would be moved into the district's online learning program, which combines live instruction and self-study. And here's what the judge said about that mandate. The mandate is not merely about how education is delivered or who may be physically present on campus, as the court previously viewed it. Instead, the mandate dictates which school the student may attend and the curriculum he may continue to receive. And the school district doesn't have the authority to do that, was ultimately his decision. So,
wow.
You know, L.A.
Liberal,
you know,
L.A.
big city. So, you know, you can win these fights, but just understand, for those who are, again, thinking that everyone has moved on. No, the COVIDians in positions of authority, particularly in governor's mansions at the school district level, they're still prosecuting that war. They're still working to justify the decisions they made over the last 2.5 years. And they're still trying to impose their will on you and your kids. That's still happening. And in some places, they're fighting back ineffectively.
Well, it's also happening on Twitter. Former U.S. Surgeon General Jerome Adams and I got into a Twitter spat back and forth, basically saying, you know, we're in another surge and lockdowns. You know, if we don't pay attention now, if we make the same mistakes as before, we're going to have lockdowns and schools may close. And so he and I went back and forth and I said, more kids died from suicide. And he said, no, you know, less kids died in 2020 because they weren't around other kids. And then I said, he goes, how do you know that kids died from suicide? And I played Dylan Buckner's mother at her son's funeral. And he shut up after this.
I know Dylan would be with us today if COVID hadn't prevented him from being in person working on projects with classmates, from being in person to work out with his teammates, being able to grab a burger or tacos and just hang with his friends in a restaurant. While on Thursday, that was just a speculation of mine, Friday's event and the way it affected me has given me all the conviction I need to know that Dylan's death was COVID-related.
You're listening to Chicago's Morning Answer with Dan Proft and Amy Jacobson on AM 560, The Answer.
Hey, business owners, is your business and money in good hands? Does your bank invest in your success? Hi, Mike Gallagher here, letting you know that when you need a relationship bank, Signature Bank makes commercial banking personal. I love these guys. Not only do they have expansive industry experience, a strong financial track record, but they're also highly capitalized for strategic growth. That's so important. That's why Signature Bank is my bank. They know what it means to grow a business by designing solutions that are right for you and only you. These are real people. They're ready to help. So reach out to my friends at Signature Bank. Make the call today, 773-467-5630. 773-467-5630. Or visit them online at signaturebank.bank. That's signaturebank.bank. Your business could be Signature Bank's next success story. Go online, signaturebank.bank, member FDIC, equal housing lender. Signature Bank.
Only the biggest stories, only the biggest guests, and only the biggest opinions. This is AM 560, The Answer.
Top of the morning, Dan and Amy. It was a point that many people made last week after the horrific atrocity that Highland Park 4th of July parade shooting. And Governor Spaulding went up there before the shooter was caught, before families had been notified about an injured or murdered loved one.
And so did Tammy Duckworth. It's an election year.
Went up there to make it political and got all morally indignant, performative, in the performative way that a hack like him would do it, and talked about how furious he is about the existence of guns that he doesn't like. Well, the question was raised by many, why haven't we seen Spaulding on the south or west side, pick a weekend, any weekend, being similarly furious about the body count that we have to report after every weekend in Chicago, particularly in the summer, the number of dead and the number of shot. Yeah. And that's something that Jake Tapper took up on State of the Union.
Yeah, we had 72 shot 4th of July weekend in Chicago.
The 4th of July weekend death toll in Chicago, as you know, surpassed the Highland Park shooting. You visited Highland Park after the shooting, but T.J. Grooms, who's an assistant pastor of New Beginnings Church of Chicago, said, quote, if you are in a position of power, you must make sure that the same energy and the same effort that you put in one area is put in the other. I will not visit an area like Highland Park and then not show up to the other end of the spectrum. One parent told CNN that they see the difference in how black and brown children are treated all the time. What do you say to any parents who are asking why the Highland Park shooting is getting so much more attention than the gun violence facing residents in parts of Chicago, specifically minority neighborhoods in Chicago, every single day?
He took a breath, and here's his answer.
Well, I can speak at least for myself. I'm not giving more attention to one than another. In fact, much of what we've done in our budget over the last 6 months for this current fiscal year is to put money into programs that serve black and brown communities throughout Chicago, in fact, throughout the rest of the state, particularly communities where there's been a high degree of violence. And I have been to and spent time with the communities and families that have been affected by gun violence on the south side of Chicago, west side of Chicago as well. Highland Park happens to be the latest, and it's an unusual one that I think the nation is paying attention to, in part because of the weapon that was used and the number of people killed all at once by one particular shooter. Having said that, talking about assault weapons isn't the only thing that we ought to be talking about. It's, of course, the issues of the underlying challenges that lead to violence. We need to reduce poverty in our nation. Here in Illinois, we're trying to do that. We need to help lift up these communities that are so often left out and left behind.
Yeah, so
left behind.
So, Jake, what I do is with the city of Chicago, I throw money at it, and I got to keep relatively quiet because I got Lightfoot and Fox and the Democrat socialist power structure there. You know, and I need them for reelection. I back them for their reelections. And, you know, I don't want to get into a public spat over the failure to police Chicago with those in charge of policing Chicago. So that's why I just throw money at them so I can come on shows like yours and say, I'm very concerned. I'm equally concerned. That's why I throw money at them, or in your parlance, fund programs that make their way through the state to selected individuals that are particularly good at rounding up votes for Democrats when it comes election time. But then in Highland Park, you know, that's my opportunity to stand with, you know, my people, the wealthy left, and do what we really like to do, which is decry guns. You see, so you see the difference?
Well, Jake Tapper didn't push back at all on that bull jive answer, that canned answer.
312-642-5600, turnkey.pro answer line, 64636-DA, turnkey.pro text. And you know why? You know it's about Chicago and it's about electoral politics and nothing else, is because it's not just that he could go to the west side or the south side on any given weekend to do his performative moral indignation routine. He could go to any neighborhood.
He can go to Lakeview. He could go to the neighborhood he lives in the Gold Coast.
Right. He could do it.
He doesn't have to go far.
He could do it in wealthy enclaves to highlight how out of control things are. Like River North, where you had four-shot
Snickers bar.
Right on State in Illinois again.
I'm surprised that place is still open. Shut it down.
It has nothing to do with the bar. It has to do with what happens at 2 a.m. in Chicago. But it could be 2 p.m. in Chicago, too. You could do it about the carjacker who slammed into a bunch of people in Old Town at that bar restaurant uproar and thankfully only injured six people with the car. What if... Six people. I mean, you could do this anywhere, anytime in Chicago. You could do it with Lincoln Park and carjackings. You could do it with Lincoln Park and that kid that was the attempted execution of that kid for his cell phone that we talked about a few weeks back. But he doesn't do it. He doesn't do it anywhere in Chicago. What does he do? He says, I'm throwing money at it.
He says he meets with them. His idea of meeting with them is he'll have a press conference and he'll bring a mom up whose son was killed violently in the streets of Chicago, and that's his definition of meeting with people.
The meeting
he uses them for the press conference, and then they leave and they go on their merry way.
The meeting with people is selected, pre-qualified individuals who will toe the party line and serve as mascots for the administration. Because that's how the wealthy left views black and brown people that they like to talk about, these honkies like Pritzker, that they like to talk about so much. They view them as mascots. They're not people. They're means to political ends.
Well, then he'll shake his hand and look concerned, maybe sometimes hug, maybe sometimes not. And then they walk out the door, and he walks out the door. Heck, I even saw him at Lawrence Hall. He didn't even go in and meet with the kids, and the kids were – he just walked in, acted like he cared, and then walked out. And all the kids were waiting to meet him.
What about Beverly over the weekend? that bar in Beverly where the off-duty cop was shot in the back, and there's some suggestion he may be paralyzed. What about police officers? I'm furious about what's happening to police officers. It's open season on police officers. Now, I think from the accounts I've heard, and I think the reporting on this has been wrong, by the way, saying, oh, it's a 31-year-old, and the 31-year-old got in an argument. 31-year-old turned out to be an off-duty cop. The way I heard it is there were people outside or inside. They got in an argument. They took it outside. One guy went and got a gun. They opened fire, and the off-duty cop was in the bar, and he got shot incidental to the conflict, not because he was a part of the conflict. That's what I heard from two different people. But what about, but I mean, just generally using that as an opportunity. I'm furious about what is happening to Chicago police. I'm furious what I saw July 4th weekend where people are attacking. They're proactively attacking police cars when they pull up on scene. They feel like they have license to
open the door and throw in a firecracker. Happened four times.
We have police being shot at. We have just a general lack of respect for police. I'm furious about that. Send a message that we need to respect the police if you want to have law and order. And guess what? At least a supermajority, not everybody apparently, like the people in office, but a supermajority of the residents want law and order in Chicago. But where is that, you know, moral scorn being heaped on those who are bad actors from Pritzker? You don't see it. Why don't you see it? Tom and Volo, you're on Chicago's Morning Answer.
Yeah, I kept hearing, I'm not hearing assault weapon was used, but I'm hearing some other people that it was a 9mm with a stock put to it.
They
nothing more than a handgun.
No, none of his weapons were modified, according to Chris Covelli.
He had a what I read is that they recovered an MP sport rifle. That's what I, as one of the weapons.
M&C sport rifle. That's,
yeah.
All right. Well, I'm not sure about that. But some of this, every time they come out and say something about guns and taking away magazines and or certain type guns from these politicians who talk about muskets and don't know anything
right
about guns, period. I mean, if I have the right to conceal carry, why can I not carry a Bowie knife with me? It's less lethal, but it's there for my protection. Mm-hmm. The Supreme Court's already made rulings that police departments are not responsible for your safety. People have tried to sue them, and it's already been passed. I mean, in Pritzker, that guy is partly liable for the police department being so messed up. If you have a concealed carry or a FOID card, try and get it. You're lucky. It might expire within, it takes 6 to 7 to 8 months to get it, because he took the money that went from concealed carry and background investigations and sent it somewhere else to deter people from getting this stuff. Okay. He's part of the problem.
Thanks for the
And so is Obama and the rest of them, because every time they open their mouths, all of the gun and ammo clears off the shelves real quick.
Yeah. Thanks for the call, Tom. John in Willowbrook.
Yeah, look, where was anybody at when that five-month-old child was shot through the head?
I know.
Pritzker didn't say nothing. Obama didn't say nothing. All your black politicians never said a word about it. You've got Jesse Jackson mumbles. He mumbles and mumbles and mumbles. Oh, you've got Danny Davis who gets reelected. Not one of them will do a darn thing about these kids. This is not the first child that's been killed out of the East and West Side. Thank you.
I know,
but it was
so,
and it wasn't like late at night. It was 6 o'clock at night, South Shore. Four shots fired, went through the taillight and hit the baby in the back of the head.
Well, here's
it was the same weekend as Roe v. Wade being overturned, but nobody really covered it.
Well, here's the thing.
I never even saw a picture.
I don't expect any politician to be compelled to comment on every murder, even, you know, every murder under the age of 18 in Chicago, because there are so many. I mean, that's a sad commentary. But to avoid it altogether, to talk about it in the we provide funding for programs kind of parlance, that's a dodge. That's a dodge. We talk about it. It is talked about, despite what these racist leftists projecting racism, projecting who they are onto other people, like to say. We know many of the names. We remember many of the names. But there's no quarter given to leftists who are going to embarrass other leftists. And so that's why you see him bob and weave around Chicago. Lightfoot and Fox and Evans have primary responsibility for what's happening in Chicago in real time, not historically, but certainly under their watch. They're who, that's who is in charge, but so is Pritzker in charge. And, you know, there are things that he can say and there are things that he can do to come over the top, but he's been unwilling to say them or do them. And so you have to ask yourself why. And you have to decide if you believe the answer that he gave to Jake Tapper. Rich in Indian Head Park.
Good morning, Dan. Good morning, Amy. It seems like to me that these politicians, Pritzker and all these other politicians, they don't care about shootings as long as it doesn't involve an assault weapon. That's their narrative right now. They want to get rid of assault weapons. So they turn away from all of the shootings, especially in Chicago. Every morning, turn on the TV and four people, six people are shot, 26 people total are shot. It's ridiculous. If they're going to crack down on things, they got to crack down on all guns, not just assault rifles. Thank you. Have a good day.
Thanks, Rich.
If you're talking about it, Dan and Amy are talking about it. It's Chicago's Morning Answer on AM 560, The Answer.
Hey, business owners, is your business and money in good hands? Does your bank invest in your success? Hi, Mike Gallagher here, letting you know that when you need a relationship bank, Signature Bank makes commercial banking personal. I love these guys. Not only do they have expansive industry experience, a strong financial track record, but they're also highly capitalized for strategic growth. That's so important. That's why Signature Bank is my bank. They know what it means to grow a business by designing solutions that are right for you and only you. These are real people. They're ready to help. So reach out to my friends at Signature Bank. Make the call today. 773-467-5630. 773-467-5630. Or visit them online at signaturebank.bank. That's signaturebank.bank. Your business could be Signature Bank's next success story. Go online, signaturebank.bank, member FDIC, equal housing lender. Signature Bank.
This is Chicago's Morning Answer with Dan Proft and Amy Jacobson on AM 560, The Answer.
Top of the morning, Dan and Amy, the great disintegration of our great cities, New York being one of them. Did you see the story last week about the three women who trashed a Lower East Side French fry shop?
Why? No,
Del Fries, because of a $1.75 charge for dipping sauce. I mean, if you if you watch the video, they behave like animals.
Well, I don't even think animals behave like that.
$25,000 in damages they did to the store.
For a $1.75 charge?
And the Bell Fries proprietor, not only were the women crazy, destructive animals, but everyone just stood by and watched. Everyone outside was recording and laughing and cheering on the girls, which is the most disgusting part.
That's what people do. It's all the, who can get on YouTube, who can become a YouTube star, can catch the violence. But they're doing it at North Avenue Beach. They all stand in a circle with their phones up, and they wait for a fight to start so they can capture it. And then that fist fight, you know, leads to gunfire.
In Philadelphia, a group of deranged teenagers were caught on camera laughing and taking videos as they beat an elderly man to death with a traffic cone. This was last month. James Lambert, 72, viciously attacked by a group of 17s in the early morning hours on June 14th. Video of the incident was released by police on Friday, showing Lambert trying to walk away from the group as they follow him across the street before one of the male assailants strikes him from behind with a cone, which knocked him to the ground. While he was down, a girl picks up the same cone and chucks it at him. Another one in the group records on his phone. Lambert tries to get up to flee down the sidewalk from his attackers, but the girl picks up the cone again, chases him down, throws it on once more while some of the teens laugh and smile. Lambert was taken to a local hospital where he died the following day from his injuries. So, and, you know, I don't think we have to belabor the point with our audience on Chicago. So in this environment, this story out of New York is getting a lot of attention, deservedly so. Do you have the right to protect yourself? I mean, we're getting back into sort of Bernie Getz territory in a New York pre-Giuliani that was lawless.
This video is disgusting.
Thus the entrance of Giuliani. How much worse does it need to get? Jose Alba is a 61-year-old bodega clerk. Woman walks into his bodega, picks up a bag of chips for her daughter, and she tries to use her EBT card to pay for the food. The EBT card doesn't work.
I've been there.
Oh, God. Yeah.
I know. It's so sad that they threw money at all of us. $5 trillion. Okay, so her card didn't work.
The woman contends Alba snatched the bag of potato chips from the girl. There's nothing on the video. I've watched all the video. It's not great audio, so that's why we're not playing it, but you can watch the video online. And she can be heard asking Albert how he rang up the sale, and then he says, okay, let me do it another time, because she insists there's money on the EBT card. And doesn't work. The woman then goes on to say, I'm quoting here from what you can discern from the store video. I'm going to bring my N-word down here, and he going to F you up. My N is going to come down right here now and F you up. Alba, the store clerk, says, that's not my fault. It's not working. He continues to ring up sales from other customers, telling one customer she doesn't have the money. Another woman asked, did they take something from you? And the store clerk said, no, I took it back. Then comes in her 35-year-old boyfriend, who turns out to be a convicted felon. And he pushes
him around right away.
Starts angry, and he gets angrier. He comes in hot. Then he goes around to the Alba's side of the counter, and he's in his face. And then he pushes him down. He physically pushes him. He's the one who initiated the contact, the violence. Pushes him back into a seat in the corner of the behind the counter area.
So he had no escape route.
And then Alba's just sitting there. But Alba said when he came around, look, I don't want any trouble, Papa. That's what he said. I don't want any trouble. I'm not good for trouble. And he had his hands up. Pushed back. Then the assailant stands him up and is like starting to take him like he's taking him like a child, like with the back of his shirt, and he's pulling him out from behind the counter, or he's attempting to. And that's when on the video you see Alba has a knife and he stabs the guy that had shoved him down and was trying to take him out from out behind the counter.
He stabbed a career felon who attacked him. That's what I see from watching this video.
We also see
done the same thing.
New video that was obtained by the New York Post over the weekend seems to show the woman who was there still standing in sort of the entryway to the behind the counter area where her boyfriend had gone, seems to show that she pulled a knife from her purse and she stabbed Jose Alba. And in fact, in court, during his arraignment, the clerk, Alba's, the lawyer for the clerk, for Alba, said that the girlfriend stabbed him 3 times in the shoulder and hand while he was, being manhandled and then fought back against her boyfriend.
I just can't believe that the store clerk was charged with murder.
He was charged with murder. He was held on $250,000 bond. He was sent to Rikers, and it was a GoFundMe effort that raised the 25 grand he needed to get out, and he's now out pending trial.
But the charges against him should be dropped.
Well, should they? 312-642-5600, turnkey.pro answer line, 646-36DA, turnkey.pro text line. He's not talking. He said Saturday night through his door, "I'm not talking to anybody. Talk to my lawyer."
That's smart.
Which is, yeah, that's
something
good
the
advice
Primo
from
family should try.
Good advice from his lawyer and good advice that he's following. But this is getting a lot of attention and a lot of reporting on it because of the nature of the defense in an environment that has become so violent, whether it's New York or Chicago or Philadelphia or San Francisco or L.A. or Minneapolis, or I could go on.
Well, do you think this new surveillance video that shows the incident in a different light will clear him of the charges?
Well, here's the thing. Why has he been charged in the first place? I mean, you've got a Soros-funded DA named Alvin Bragg in Manhattan. Why do you think he got charged in the murder charged in the first place?
Because he's white and the offender's black.
Well, I don't think he's white. I wouldn't call him white. I think he's Latino. Jose Alba? Yeah, calling her mama, calling him papa. Well, I mean, maybe he's Dominican or something. I don't know, but he's whatever. But, yeah, I mean, is that why? They say, well, this is the whole, like you saw with the Akron police-involved shooting. He was unarmed at the time. That's what they're going to say. Well, he was unarmed, this convicted felon who had assaulted, battered the store clerk, and then he came with a knife, and that's not a legitimate use of deadly force. He had did he have a reasonable fear for his health or life? Reasonable fear of serious bodily injury or death?
I think so.
Which is the standard for self-defense?
I mean, if that's not self-defense, then what is? We just let people roll all over us and do what they want?
Well, that to me is the larger question that people might want to contemplate when you've got all these political hacks like Governor Spaulding running around talking about gun bans. And by the way, just understand something. That's what their position is. It is a ridiculous position in terms of being a solutionist. Even if you wanted to ban guns, even if you had every fellow traveler, you know, every Marxist fellow traveler holding every public office in every at the state level and in every locality, there are 400 million guns in circulation in this country. Banning all guns, everything, handguns, rifles, shotguns, everything. Tomorrow, what does that do? What does taking my sport rifle away from me do to protect anybody? So I don't get how people don't understand this. Do you want to live in the real world? Jose Alba had to. He had to live in the real world. So what do you tell him? What do you tell people that want a right to carry permit, a concealed carry permit in Chicago because they have to live in the real world? You tell them we're working on banning guns and getting guns out of the hands of all the law abiding and then maybe we'll get around to the criminals.
They can't keep the guns out of the criminals' hands.
Of course not. Of course not. Come on. This is like trying to put toothpaste back in the tube. It's out. It's not going back in. So what do you want to do now? What do you tell Jose Alba? You tell him you're going to prison if you defend yourself?
He went to prison.
From the criminals that these political leaders, these political hacks, turn out into the streets over and over again? The kind of, honestly, you know, the kind of behavior that we underwrite with tax dollars? This should be a high-profile case. Was Jose Alba completely in the right legally to defend himself? Yeah. So why is he being prosecuted? Because you're supposed to lay back and take it. You're supposed to lay back and take it. All their proactivity is directed at the limiting the rights of the law-abiding. So is that what you're going to do? Lay back and take it? I ask again, how much worse does it have to get in places like New York and Chicago and Philadelphia and all these major and a lot of mid-major cities, Memphis? How much worse does it have to get before you make a course correction? See, that's the problem. You cannot tolerate what's happening in Chicago. You know, this is what people say. We cannot tolerate what's happening. I can't take what's happening to my quality of life. I can't take what's happening with respect to the diminished public safety, diminished safety I feel in and around Chicago. But I also can't bring myself to make a course correction. Well, you got to choose one. This is one of those binary choices. Either you make a course correction or you learn to sit back and take it. Don in Bloomingdale, here on Chicago's Morning Answer.
You know, in New York, you have to give the government a reason why you think you need a concealed carry.
You used to, not until the Supreme Court ruled you didn't.
Exactly. And so here's your reason. I just watched the news, and I don't want this to happen to me. But you know what, Dan? For decades, I've always said, I'm not giving up on my state. I'm staying and I'm fighting. Not anymore. I'm going. This isn't worth fighting for. It's not going to change. The political environment in the state is retarded. It's not going to change. So I'm exiting. I'm like Sean Thompson said, and like you did. I'm gone. So you know, I'll take my money because I don't want to be the last guy here with the sign in front of my house says for sale and nobody's interested. I don't want to be that guy.
Thanks, Don. Margo Burridge.
I'd say Jose Alba better not watch Death Wish or Dirty Harry, two of the most popular movies ever made, because we're living in it. I feel like we're living in Death Wish. It's terrible. Nobody law-abiding has any rights anymore, and the criminals got it all. And that's what those two movies point out.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. That's all I got.
Thanks for the call, Margo. Right, and they were, and they came out in a, I mean, sort of maybe Eastwood was a derivative of Bronson, but they came out at a time when that was what people were feeling in major cities, which is why they, in part, why they were so popular in addition to the performances and all that. But it was relevant. Dave and Cicero, you're on Chicago's Morning Answers.
Yes, good morning. I'm a tradesman. I was working recently in a building in a south side along the lakefront. And this older black gentleman, probably, I don't know, late 60s, he's got a business. He's got a beautiful van, work van. It's all labeled with his business. He goes to wealthy neighborhoods, does on-site bicycle repairs and handyman stuff. He's a very talented plumber, whatnot. And I asked him, I said, you know, with 5 carjackings a day in the city, and you primarily in the South Side, how do you, you're a target. He goes, I got to have my concealed carry. He goes, they come up on me. He goes, I let them know. And he goes, they have come up on me, and I've let them know or showed them or whatever, and the problem goes away. So I just wanted to relate that out there, you know, to say, oh, if you vote for a Republican, you're racist and this and that. No, there's real people in the real world that need to protect themselves.
Thanks for the call, Dave.
But we'll be fine after today because President Biden is signing the Safer Communities Act. And Pritzker's going to be there, too. And, of course, a woman from Chicago who lost her son in 2006. And it basically, the bill expands background checks and encourages states to pass red flag laws. Isn't that nice? It's going to be all better, Dan, after today. Yeah.
Tom in Blue Island.
Again, and Amy, I had heard that GoFundMe originally took down the fund for this man. And so if he's out, I'm wondering if they reverse course or not. But either way, it can't be denied that there's a coalition between these terrible prosecutors and big businesses, especially like GoFundMe.
Thanks for the call, Tom. Frank, Arlington Heights.
Hey, good morning. I remember, I forget the guy's name, who ran against Fox a couple years ago, but he was at one of the meetings.
O'Brien, the judge?
Yeah, the judge, yeah. You know, he gave her a good race, but, you know, he didn't win in the end, obviously. And I asked him, you know, is the castle defense, which is a, you know, a standard legal doctrine about defending your home, is that a dead letter? Cook County now. And he didn't really, he kind of looked at me and was just kind of like, that's a good question, but I don't know how to respond to that. I mean, that's what that's gone, the castle defense. You don't have that here in Illinois anymore with the way that crimes are prosecuted. You don't have the right to defend your home. It's a standard, you know, legal concept and jurisprudence going back to probably the Magna Carta.
Well, you never really did in Cook County. And let me give you an example. You may remember this, Frank, but the Hale DeMar case in Wilmette from the early 90s. Hale DeMar, do you remember that case?
Yeah, I don't know. No, I don't.
Yeah,
know.
So this guy breaks into Hale DeMar's home in Wilmette, and Hale DeMar comes and it shoots him as he's fleeing. He had a weapon. As he's fleeing out DeMar's window, I think. I may have some of the details wrong, but that's essentially the gist of what went down. And Hale DeMar didn't kill him. Hale DeMar was charged by both the village for a gun violation, because this is back in the days of gun bans and on the North Shore, and also for shooting the guy who had broken into his home, charged by Cook County. So, you know, I mean, that's always been the attitude of these leftist gun banners who say, make the false promise, we can protect you. And what they're really saying is you sit back and you take whatever you're going to get from us. That's how it actually works. And what they say is we're going to protect you. We're going to keep you safe from all of the ills of the world because we're going to create this utopia. And you just need to take it as an article of faith and roll with whatever we roll out. It's been like that for so long.
Yeah. Well, it's worse than I thought then. But, you know, it's really disgusting that people do not have the right to defend themselves and to defend their own homes even.
That's right.
And I don't know if it's ever going to change. I don't know if it's ever going to change in this state. Like your last caller said, it might just be time to move.
Thanks for the call, Frank. Well, at least in New York, I mean, I know Jose Alba wasn't looking to be a test case. He wasn't looking to be a cause celeb, but he's going to be now because it's important how this case is adjudicated in New York City.
This is the morning show. More Chicago radio listeners are choosing. This is Chicago's Morning Answer on AM 560, The Answer. If you're looking for the latest news, insight into what it means, and the sharpest opinion, there's only one station in Chicago where you can turn, and it's this one. We're AM 560, The Answer.
Top of the morning, Dan and Amy. On Wednesday night, D.C. protesters got a tip that Justice Brett Kavanaugh was dining at Morton's, their downtown D.C. location. We don't have one anymore in Chicago.
We don't? They're all gone? Is there one in the burbs?
The one in Chicago's gone.
Right.
Protesters soon showed up out front, called the manager to tell him to kick Kavanaugh out, and later tweeted that the justice was forced to exit through the rear of the restaurant. Wall Street Journal's Daniel Lippman looked into the incident, confirmed that account, and a rep for Morton's said the following in a statement. Honorable Supreme Court Justice Kavanaugh and all of our other patrons at the restaurant were unduly harassed by unruly protesters while eating dinner at our Morton's restaurant. Politics, regardless of your side or views, should not trample the freedom at play of the right to congregate and eat dinner. There is a time and place for everything. Disturbing the dinner of all of our customers was an act of selfishness and void of decency. Selfishness and lack of decency, well, those happen to be the calling cards of these leftist goon squads, whether it's Antifa or Ruth Sent Us or Black Lives Matter. We've seen this play out over and over again over the last several years, so why should anyone be surprised? 312-642-5600, turnkey.pro answer line. 646-36-DA, turnkey.pro text line.
And there's it doesn't stop there. This liberal group is offering bounties for anyone who could provide a location for conservative Supreme Court justices putting on their social media. They're offering $50 for a confirmed sighting of a conservative justice, $200 if the justice is still at the location 30 minutes later.
Hmm.
Do you think that this is a problem? Maybe the Department of Justice want to focus in on this group and shut them down?
Hmm.
But also, it gets worse. I mean, Pete Buttigieg, whoever, like, the upcoming rising star for the Democratic Party, he was on Fox News. His husband tweeted out something supporting this bad behavior.
Let's go to a red hot issue here in Washington. Your husband tweeted after Justice Brett Kavanaugh left a Washington restaurant due to protesters. The tweet reads, "Sounds like he just wanted some privacy to make his own dining decisions." Is that appropriate, sir?
Look, when public officials go into public life, we should expect two things. One, you should always be free from violence, harassment, and intimidation. And two, you're never going to be free from criticism or peaceful protest, people exercising their First Amendment rights.
Okay.
And that's what happened in this case. Remember, the justice never even came into contact with these protesters, reportedly didn't see or hear them. And these protesters are upset because a
honest, but he never answered the question. Is it appropriate for your husband to tweet, "Sounds like he wanted his own privacy to make his own dining decisions"?
Aren't they clever, the two of them? And just a delightful couple. Whether Kavanaugh saw the protesters or not,
they were,
is not the issue. The issue is what I just read from Morton's. Unduly harassed by unruly protesters while eating dinner. Disturbing the dinner of all of our customers was an act of selfishness and void of decency. So what's the response to that? The sort of two-stepping that PBUT and KJP and all these folks are doing with, you know, this, well, you have a right to protest. Yeah, no, we get it.
We get that. But they're,
of course, you have a right to protest. But number one, it's in public spaces. All right. And number two, right, you can cross the line. But here's the larger thing. How do you think this plays out for you? I guess they think because they were able to depose Trump in 2020, despite their selfish and indecent behavior on the streets in the summer of 2020. Prior to that, harassing Ted Cruz and his wife at a D.C. restaurant.
Oh, and
prior to that, Virginia restaurant telling Sarah Sanders and her family to take a hike.
And Rand Paul, with the harassment he went through.
Yeah, you may,
a Trump rally.
You may get away with that on occasion. But I got to believe, maybe I'm wrong, maybe I have too much faith in the decency of the American people, but I don't think so. This is one of those issues. Yeah, I may agree with the position that the protesters are taking, but you are crossing a line and you are making it impossible for me to stand next to you. So you want to behave, as, again, Morton said, selfishly and indecently. You want to unduly harass people while they're having dinner, a night out with whatever, their friends and family. Okay, well, you go ahead. One, you're not going to engender any friends with that particular restaurant and the staff and the patrons. Number two, when the stories get out like this, you're not going to engender a lot of political support for that approach, I suggest.
312-642-5600, turnkey.pro, answer line 64636, type in DA, then a quick comment. And now there's backlash that the restaurant is facing. They indicated that a lot of people making fake reservations. Arnold Benedict, table for four. Abortion rights, made in that's the name of the person that they gave. And then the classic table for four for Dick Hertz.
Uh-huh.
And so they, you know, brought an extra chef because they thought they're going to have a full house. Bitter table of one.
Did Arnold Benedict, would like to sit inside or outside?
I think he requested. I don't know what.
I don't know where that.
I didn't touch anything. You know, he wanted a window, a table by the window.
Mr. Arnold, are there any special occasions we should know about that you're celebrating with us that evening?
Bitter table of one. Your party is ready. They requested a seat outside because they were alone.
That's pretty. That's high level stuff. I mean, that is Bart Simpson quality.
Another person: Amy Coney, Neil Gore, Kavanaugh, Roe Wade made a reservation. Yeah, the list goes on.
I get the gist.
The First Amendment.
We've all seen Bart Simpson and Mo Sizlak's interaction. We get it. This is the deep thinking that you're dealing with these protesters. Yeah. You know, they are substantively protest on a particular issue that they feel passionate about. They know so much about. They're representing your views, right? Right? Center left, sensible, otherwise sensible person. I mean, how can you look at this and, you know, like pump your fist, say, way to go. I don't think many people are going to do that. I think the unhinged Marxists will do that. They're part of it. But that's a small, small, small percentage of the electorate. So you go ahead and behave selfishly and indecently and see where you find yourselves.
But, I mean, the fact that this, you know, liberal group is offering bounties, they're targeting, they're like, hey, D.C. service industry workers, if you see Brett Kavanaugh, Alito, Clarence Thomas, you know who's on the list. DM us the details. We'll Venmo you $50 and then $200 if they're still there. Mm-hmm. I mean, that is sick.
Clay and Wheeling.
Be shut down.
Good morning, Dan and Amy. First, Dan, how do you take your steak?
Medium.
Ooh, well, that answers my second question. I was going to ask you if you want table for two at Morton's. medium rare is the cutoff for me.
Yeah, I know. I knew you were going to say that.
So. These are millennials. They have learned that if they cry hard enough, and that they will get their way. And this is coming from a millennial. Mm-hmm. So you just got to remember who you're dealing with and stick it out and be tough with them. That's it. And then they'll eventually give up. Thanks, guys.
Thanks, Clay. Lee and Hammond.
Hey, guys. You know, this is why nobody should take these phony Democrats and their January 6th thing is nothing but a joke. Because the way they coddle these left-wing goons, you know, it's like the hypocrisy is at levels I don't even think I could ever imagine. And did anybody forget they tried to kill Kavanaugh about 3-4 weeks ago, and yet we're supposed to take these idiots seriously? And these Democrats have nothing to say about any of this. It's just they're a joke. I don't know why anybody with a brain takes these Democrats seriously at all, really.
Thanks for the call, Lee. Can you imagine if there had been an assassination plot against Ruth Bader Ginsburg by someone who identified as, you know, being on the conservative side of the political spectrum.
Oh, my God.
Can you imagine?
Blow up cable news.
The wall-to-wall coverage. I don't, other than the particulars that were reported when this guy was arrested, the guy with the assassination.
I haven't heard anything about him.
Who had this assassination plot, then was talked off the ledge by his sister and actually called police on himself. Other than that, yeah. What details do we know about this guy and the plot and any other people being involved? And it just goes into a void. It goes into that black hole where MH370 is, according to Don Lemon.
I'm just surprised too that this group hasn't been taken off Twitter. They tweeted this out saying, "If you spot them, we'll Venmo you $50 and $200 if they're still there 30 minutes later." Why hasn't Twitter taken them down?
Forget Twitter for a second.
Well,
does that platform they're using? Right. Does that raise any concerns over at DOJ? The same, you know, DOJ and federal government that, as we heard from Kevin Brock, the former assistant director of Intel for the FBI, having problems getting the sort of security for the Supreme Court justices under siege that is warranted, you know, by the law. Having problems getting law enforcement with regard to people around the homes of these Supreme Court justices, which is federal statute. Yeah.
Unbelievable.
This sort of thing, does that rise to the level of like a parent at a school board meeting criticizing curriculum and, you know, being castigated as a domestic terrorist? Is trying to get trying to get location on Supreme Court justices so you can send a mob at them wherever they are. Does that raise any concerns? Do you think that has any potential danger associated with it? Okay. Larry and Bartlett.
Hey, good morning, Dan and Amy. I think a simple way for restaurants to put an end to this bunch of crap, require a non-refundable, let's see, Morton's, $150, maybe even $200, and get bill it to the credit card immediately. No credit card, no reservation.
Yeah, thanks for the call, Larry. I mean, I think, you know,
A lot of them were made with Open Table, too, and they didn't require a credit card.
I hear what you're saying, but and you had some Chicago restaurants doing that because of people walking out on bills.
Oh, my God.
But I mean, yeah, I mean, I know Steak 48 was one of them. But anyway, but I mean, you know, you don't want the restaurant to have to change the way they're doing business and turn and essentially erect a barrier for customers. I mean, you can probably deal with a little bit of the Bart Simpson, Mo Cieslak routine. But in terms of the protection of these private spaces, yeah, it's a public place of accommodation, but it's private property in a private space. You know, this is where I ask again about law enforcement and protection. Yeah. I'm telling you, go ahead, take this hysterical approach, act indecently and selfishly in a spectacular way such that it makes national news. If you think that helps your cause, I think the left is going to be surprised.
Listen to Dan and Amy on your smartphone. Download the AM 560 mobile app today at 560theanswer.com/mobile. This is Chicago's Morning Answer with Dan Proft and Amy Jacobson on AM 560 The Answer.
Top of the morning, Dan and Amy. Where does the war stand? The Ukrainians' efforts to repel the Russians? Some recent polling I've seen, it's starting to lose the interest of the American people. Even as you have developments in the news that surround it, like the admission of Sweden and Finland to NATO. Mark Kimmett, who's a retired Army Brigadier General, had a piece in the Journal over the weekend suggesting that it is starting to look like something akin to the Western Front in World War I, prolonged and bloody. Recent changes in Russian operations suggest they're making a transition from a maneuver war to an artillery war, he writes. Rather than win through maneuver, the goal now is to win through exhaustion. Both Mr. Putin and President Zelensky seek to wear the other side down, and the NATO promise of indefinite resupply to offset the Russian artillery advantage will likely result in even more static front lines. As long as it takes, he concludes, may make the Donbass into a 21st century Flanders field. Is that an apt assessment? Well, let's ask an expert in the area. Pleased to be joined for our weekly conversation with Lieutenant Colonel Jim Carafano, Vice President of the Catherine and Shelby Cullum Davis Institute for International Studies at the Heritage Foundation, author of Brutal War, Jungle Fighting in Papua New Guinea, 1942. Jim, what do you say to General Kimmett?
Well, Mark's an old friend. We spent a lot of time together in the Army. I think his assessment is about right. It's nothing that we actually haven't said on this show, mm-hmm. I think actually going back months, that we're in a chronic phase. The Russians don't have the combat power to overrun the country. The Ukrainians are never likely to muster the combat power to recover the entire country. What that actually looks like, I think, really be up to Putin and Zelensky, because they both have, you know, options and choices and what they make. But I think what we have to do is step back, take a deep breath, and look at it from a coldly U.S. perspective. You know, what's in our interest? Because, you know, as we've said on this show many times, for the United States, it's not about the Ukraine. Love the Ukrainian people, have all the empathy in the world for them. But the number one job of the United States is look after U.S. interests. And I think the key distinction here is between people who think that this is all about the Ukraine and a lot of us who think that for Putin it was never about the Ukraine. It's about the larger designs to destabilize Western Europe, which is also something the Chinese were highly interested in. And what the war in Ukraine has done is kind of blunted that. And so, you know, I think for us, the same big two issues are still on the table. What can we do from Russia being a future threat? That's a strong NATO that can defend itself. That's energy independence that's not requires you to buy energy from your enemies, including the Russians and solar panels made with slave labor from China. And then there's a question of the future of Ukraine. And I think helping them defend themselves is a responsible thing to do. I think it's achievable. And, the fact that Americans aren't paying attention to this day to day, I just think, well, what do people expect? I mean, it's not the kind of thing that Americans are going to do that. You know, we have. And to me, the big frustration here is people that frame, oh, forget about Ukraine. We should be focusing on energy prices and inflation and an incredibly open border that's much more of a danger to us actually right now than the Russians. And I agree with all those things, but I think the United States has to be able to do both. And the problem is if we didn't do anything in Ukraine, it's not like we would ever get Biden to pay attention to inflation and energy prices and illegal immigration and what's happening in our schools and crime on our streets. So there you go.
It's a great distraction for him. But how many fatalities or casualties have there been since this war began? Does anybody really know?
I don't think anybody knows precisely. I mean, we're pretty sure that the Russian combat losses are probably around 40,000. Then when you add in wounded, runaways, missing in action, that number is probably treble. The Ukrainians are having casualties at about the rate of 100 a day. And then the civilian losses are definitely in the thousands. And don't forget, there's probably over a million Ukrainians who have literally been abducted from their country and forcibly moved to Russia. So, the numbers are pretty big. And this is part of the reason why, you know, people are concerned about this is if this cascades throughout Europe, this is catastrophic. I mean, if you've got tens of millions of refugees and that's just the beginning of a wave of destabilization, that's incredibly serious. And so as significant as the cost seems, they pale to the alternative of a Europe literally on fire again, like it was in the 1930s.
And does the addition of Sweden and Finland to NATO make NATO stronger? And if it does, then why weren't we advocating for that for years prior to this occurring?
Yeah, I mean, absolutely. I mean, if you look at the northern, just to get a map, if you look at the northern flank of NATO, you're never going to defend, and there's never going to be a fight on the northern flank without Finland and Sweden. We just call them Swinland, it's just easier.
Sure.
I mean, my people don't like that.
That's fine. Yeah.
And the easy answer is because the people of Finland and Sweden were never in favor of it, and I think they. What Ukraine has demonstrated is they have no faith and confidence that Putin's ambitions stop in Ukraine. And so they look at the future peace and prosperity of their countries. They don't want to look like Ukraine. So they're all in for NATO.
Mm-hmm.
And let's be honest. Now, this is the point I keep making over and over again. And first of all, Finland and Sweden both have very good militaries, and they're going to add a significant lot of capability. They're not joining NATO to be defended by Brussels and Berlin and Paris.
Right. Yeah.
They're joining NATO because the United States is there. And so what we have now is a situation where I think the northern flank is in infinitely better shape than it just was months ago. I'm sure Putin's not happy about that. Because of Ukraine, there's been so much more attention to the central flank. I think if we just move the forces forward that we've talked about, that is more than enough to kill anything that the Russians could cross the line with. And then I think the question is really is the southern flank, which is the Black Sea, Romania, you know, that area and stuff, kind of securing that up. So I can see a prospect that within 2 years, and you have to remember, the good news here is because Putin is so bogged down in Ukraine, he can't really threaten anybody anytime soon. I think in 2 years, we could have a NATO defense against Russia that actually makes the Russian military threat to NATO a joke.
Former senator,
if you think about it, sorry not to interrupt, but if you think about it, considering we were denuding our entire military capability in NATO over decades, and at one point under Obama, we did not have one operational tank in Western Europe. That's a potentially remarkable turnaround, which, oh, by the way, is only possible because of all the legwork and all the spade work that Trump did when he was president to set up the conditions for a NATO that actually can responsibly defend the area of NATO. Sorry.
No, that's good. No, that's a good additional point. Former Senators Joe Lieberman and Gordon Humphrey write over at The Hill that it's time to open a new front against Putin inside Russia. They lament the loss of the U.S. Information Agency back 20 years ago. They'd like to see something like that resuscitated so that we could have our best message makers make appeals directly to the Russian people for a better life, a life that doesn't include Putin as their autocratic head of state.
Well, I think actually radio RFL has been doing a very good job. Then there's the other component of that, which is Voice of America, which quite honestly has been a bit of a basket case for years. It really evolved into kind of leftist propaganda as opposed to a vehicle that actually promoted America's interests around the world. And, Trump waited almost 2 years before he nominated somebody. It took them another year to get in. They had almost no time to actually fix anything. So I would say, Voice of America, probably not the best instrument that we should have. I think Radio Free Europe, with the resources we've given them, has really been quite an extraordinary job.
Describe the importance of the information campaign, the messaging campaign, how you penetrate the consciousness of a foreign country's people, why that's part of it.
No, I think it's just important. To be realistic, I mean, these things aren't going to topple regimes. But what they do is, much like, Jeff Goldblum in Jurassic Park, life finds a way. The truth finds a way. You find a way to get authentic messages to people, and they think for themselves. And that allows the foundation for the future. So it's something worth doing. I think you have to be realistic about what you can achieve with that.
Mm-hmm.
But why would you just let the other side run rampant on the information battlefield and be completely absent? That makes no sense. And the problem that we've had with our official U.S. government information agencies is we keep having this civil war between people who think, well, we're journalists, and most of these people are leftists, and people think, no, what you're supposed to be there for is to not to lie or push propaganda, but to explain an American perspective in a way that's supportive of America's foreign policy and interests.
Speaking, I hear you.
A State Department that doesn't do that, so I don't know why we would expect Voice of America.
Speaking of regimes toppling, so the president of Sri Lanka had to abdicate among protesters getting too close, protesters who are protesting over a country that has descended into anarchy. We talked a bit about it on Friday, and it has everything to do with fuel and food prices. We see Dutch farmers revolting against their government to the point of government firing upon them.
Same sort of food shelves are empty now in Denmark. In the Netherlands.
Yeah, but it's sort of the same story as government eco policies that led to essentially the seizure of the lands of these farmers. But so this feud and fuel thing, if you think it can generate unrest in the West, and not Sri Lanka, but the Netherlands, we're seeing that it certainly can.
Yeah, well, what I would definitely say is I think a lot of people would immediately say, oh, there's a, you know, a global pattern here. It's food shortages. It's this. It's climate policy. It's, you know, climate change. And the reality is each one of these cases, I think, is different and unique, and you have to measure it on its own merits. Clearly, in both the case of the Netherlands and Sri Lanka, what we have are stupid governments that have made really stupid decisions. And if anything, I think the Netherlands is perfectly analogous to what we've seen in Canada over the last year.
With Freedom Convoy.
Ridiculously, yeah. Stupid. Yes, exactly right. And Sri Lanka is deeper, though. I mean, Sri Lanka is, you know, at root, you know, these guys got in bed with the Chinese. The Chinese did nothing for them. Then they had policies that ran the country into the ground. I think the good thing in Sri Lanka is it probably is a constitutional process that'll put in a government. Hopefully the Sri Lankans will learn their lesson that being dependent on the Chinese was a really stupid idea. And also hopefully what they'll learn is that these kind of, you know, these wacky policies about curbing farming are incredibly self-destructive. You know, fundamentally at the root, the climate policy is anti-human. And then when we implement the policies and we find out it has disastrous consequences for humans, particularly people in countries that don't have resilient that aren't rich, don't have incredibly resilient infrastructure and food supplies and everything else. And then we're shocked that there's misery. And then what do the climate people do? They run out and say, oh, well, the problem is climate change. And then they want to do more of these things. And you know, the reality is the climate advocates like Greta Thunberg and John Kerry, these guys are the worst imperialists of modern history. They are imposing their worldview on other people, and they are producing misery. And so that's not the definition of imperialism. I don't know what it is.
I'm glad you put Greta Thunberg and John Kerry in the same intellectual category, because I think they do belong together. Lieutenant Colonel Jim Carroll.
I'm not sure he rises.
Right. It's an insult to her. Lieutenant Colonel Jim Carafano, thanks as always. Appreciate it.
Thank you for having me.
Thank you. And he joined us on our turnkey.pro answer line.
It's what Chicago is talking about. It's Chicago's Morning Answer with Dan and Amy on AM 560, The Answer.
Dan and Amy, so last week, California Governor Gruesome Gavin Newsom made some news going after Floridians running ads in Florida saying, come to California.
Yeah, if you want to be free, if you want freedom of choice, for reproductive rights, come to California, get out of Florida.
Right.
I'll
spring for dessert at the French Laundry, the whole thing. Well,
it's sickening.
Florida has responded to
I can't wait.
The Newsom offer.
It's Independence Day, so let's talk about what's going on in America. Freedom is under attack in your state. Dictator Ron DeSantis incredibly lets you walk around without masks. That tyrant allows your kids to go to school during the pandemic, year two or four, or who the hell knows. I urge you living in Florida to join the fight. Or join us in California, where we'll take the money you earn and give it to people who don't work. Visit San Francisco, where you can walk through human feces. If you're lucky, you might step on a syringe. Check out Los Angeles, where gas is so expensive, your kids only need to skip a meal or two or ten to afford it. California, where freedom means lockdowns for you, while I go to the places you can't afford. Don't let them take your freedom. Come to California, where we'll take it, along with your money.
That is awesome.
I like the little tongue-in-cheek response. Yeah, very good.
We're going to tweet that out.
Very, very good.
The stories you need to know to start your day. This is Chicago's Morning Answer on AM 560, The Answer. If you're looking for the latest news, insight into what it means, and the sharpest opinion, there's only one station in Chicago where you can turn, and it's this one. We're AM 560, The Answer.
Top of the morning, Dan and Amy. How unhinged is the pro-abort left? They're organizing an abortion navy.
What?
Abortionist Meg Autry, she's on the left coast there in California. She's in the Bay Area, but she's taken her act to the Gulf area to provide abortions for women who live in Texas, Louisiana, Alabama, the southern portions of those states. Can't be drilling for oil in the Gulf because we got to leave the waters there for the to make them the killing fields for the pro-abort left. Take a listen to abortionist Meg Autry.
It is my life's work.
As an OBGYN, Dr. Meg Autry has performed abortions for decades. When Roe versus Wade was overturned, it jump-started a vision she'd been working on, bringing abortion services to people who can't access them on the water.
The idea or the concept is that the vessel will be in federal waters, which the distance from shore varies by which state that you're near. And there will be various ways of transportation to the vessel, depending on the distance.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. So an abortion boat.
Yeah, abortion boats on the water. Yeah, put abortion sheds on federal land. That's what Becerra and the big guy are contemplating. We got to make sure that we help Planned Parenthood make their quota. For more on this and other topics, we're pleased to be joined by John Hinderaker, president of Center of the American Experiment and founder of the Powerline blog, powerlineblog.com. John, thanks for joining us. Appreciate it.
Hey, glad to be with you, Dan.
They're doing their best to come up with ever creative and dystopian responses to the Dobbs decision so as to make this midterm election a referendum on the Dobbs decision. How successful do you think they're going to be?
Well, I think they're going to be successful to some degree in whipping up a frenzy in their base, which at this point is all they're trying to do. They're just trying to turn out their base to avoid a complete wipeout in November. And I think issues like abortion have got some ability to do that. Now, people forget the price of gasoline and the price of groceries. Of course, that's a whole other matter.
Mm. And just since I raised the issue in association with this, the issue of, and since you just raised it, gas prices and drilling, still trying to get a handle on the oil from the Strategic Petroleum Reserve that was exported to foreign countries, foreign users. This was a question that was put to KJP, Karine Jean-Pierre, the quadruple threat. And here's how she explained why that oil was exported, not our problem.
So when it comes to the oil, it is something that oil companies decide what, you know, we cannot control what oil companies do with their oil. You should ask the oil companies about where they are sending the oil they purchase and why. That is not something that we can answer from here. The Department of Energy can't dictate what oil companies do with the oil they purchase or where they ship it to sell. That is something, again, that the oil company decides on. And again, I would refer you to Department of Energy on that question. Okay.
So is that the problem, John? It's the big bad oil companies again?
Well, it's the Strategic Petroleum Reserve, Dan. I mean, one would hope that the federal government has got some control over it, but to hear her tell it, they just released the oil into the wild, and it goes to the highest bidder. To the extent that it increases worldwide supply of petroleum, it has an infinitesimal impact on the price. Because, you know, the amounts they're talking about are very, very small in relation to worldwide petroleum demand. What they really need to do is to increase drilling or stop blocking drilling here in the United States. But it's so ironic, Dan, because that's the one thing they won't do.
Yeah, well, but why did he do it in the first place? Why did Biden allow it?
Allow releasing from the Strategic Reserve? Well, he's got to do something. You know, they're betwixt and between. The truth is that they want high gasoline prices. This is part of what they envision as a transition to wind and solar energy, which is, by the way, is not happening and it's not going to happen. But it's hard for them to come out and say we're driving up gasoline prices on purpose. Then they'll really get creamed in November.
Yeah, well, they did kind of allude to it.
So they have to pretend. They have to pretend to sympathize with consumers. And that's why they carry out symbolic actions like these small releases from the reserve.
Well, it's also a teachable moment for the public, too, because one of the things this highlights is the same time they're saying that refiners need to refine more, they need to, you know, step up their game. Well, we find that U.S. refineries operated at 94.5% of their operable capacity for the week that ended July 1st. That's up from 92.2% just a year ago. And It really can't run at more than 95% without risking their infrastructure. And, of course, we haven't had a refinery built in this country for 4 decades, and there's no prospect that one's going to get built with the regulatory environment with respect to fossil fuels. So this is the result of decades, generations of leftist environmental activism that was anti-U.S. energy independent and independence. Now we get to this point, and it's the big bad oil companies that won't drill and the big bad refineries that won't refine and the big bad oil companies, again, that are exporting to the highest bidder rather than refining and maintaining. I mean, this is the environment that, to borrow the word, environment they created, and now they don't like the implications, or they're trying to at least snow people into believing that they're upset with the state of affairs and they're trying to do something about it.
Well, that's exactly right. And as you say, Dan, there hasn't been a new refinery built in I don't know how many years. Building a new oil refinery, it's like building a new dam, right? When's the last time hydroelectric power, which is totally clean, got created with a new major dam? I mean, it's been decades, and the environmentalists won't let it happen.
Now, going back to abortion, you wrote about a 10-year-old rape victim in Ohio who had to travel to Indiana for abortion. Can you walk us through what happened?
You know, this story has been everywhere. It's been tracked down. The story originated with an abortionist in Indiana who spends her time when she's not actually performing abortions as a media star. She's constantly quoted in the press, and she's constantly appearing on television and so forth. And she came up with this story that there was a 10-year-old rape victim in Ohio who, because of abortion laws there, had to cross the state line into Indiana to get an abortion. And that story, she phoned it in to the Indiana Star in Indianapolis. They printed it, and it immediately went around the world. I mean, the Washington Post, the Guardian, the Hill, TMZ, Daily Mail, Huffington Post, everybody picked it up, and nobody investigated it. And you know, it's very strange because if it's true that a 10-year-old girl got raped and impregnated, I want to get my hands on the rapist. I mean, that's the crime. It's a terrible, terrible crime that allegedly has been committed here. And yet the liberals don't seem to have any interest in prosecuting the rapist. All they can think about is, let's get this girl an abortion. And people have been trying to find any evidence that this crime was committed. The abortionist has gone to ground. She won't answer any questions like, where in Ohio did this supposedly happen?
Right.
Nobody can find any record of a criminal investigation or a criminal prosecution of any such rapist. And it looks more and more like this incident never happened at all. Certainly there's no strong reason to believe that it happened. And yet it was printed as fact by newspapers all over the world. And then Joe Biden trotted it out in his press conference on abortion. He got all indignant, and he told the story of the 10-year-old girl who got raped and was pregnant, had to go to Indiana. And it's become the centerpiece now of the liberals' argument for universal abortion on demand up to the moment of birth, and yet nobody can find any evidence that it's actually true.
I doubt that it is even true. I mean, I've been looking ever since I heard it. Like, who is this victim? Who's the rapist? Why isn't, you know? And it's a 10-year-old girl too. I don't know.
KJP didn't have an answer on that question. She just referred the D.C. press corps
to
the Department of Justice, and so.
I'm sure they're on it.
That'll be that.
The element of the story, Dan and Amy, is Glenn Kessler of the Washington Post did a fact check on it. He investigated. He called around all kinds of authorities in Ohio, couldn't find anybody who could confirm it was true or any evidence that it was true. But he concluded his fact check by saying that this story has been so widely reported, including by Joe Biden, that it has now taken on the status of a fact.
I mean, if they say it enough times and they repeat it, it must become true. It is a fact.
Yeah, remember when Donald Trump was president and he would say something and Glenn Kessler would say, well, you know, if the president says it, it takes on the status of a fact.
Uh-huh. Yeah, right. Well, this is very much like this is the 2.0 version of Michael Wolff's famous explanation for the dubious claims in his book that, look, if it sounds true, it probably is. And that's the way you should approach consuming my material. Okay, got it. All right, got it. If it's right, if the president says it, it's probably right. And if everybody echoes it and everybody's equally outraged about it, then let's just assume it's true and, you know, move on. Nothing to see here. Perfect. That's such a perfect commentary on our time. Something else that's a perfect commentary on our time is sort of the intersection between the great disintegration of America's cities, America's great cities, and these, leftist Clockwork Orange bands of goons roaming the streets. Have you heard about this one? This is a new one for me. The tire extinguishers. They're Britain-based, but like the Beatles, they've landed in the U.S., and now they're deflating the tires on SUVs around the country, including New York, Chicago, the Bay Area, because, you know, fossil fuels, you know, climate change, you know, save the planet. Now, this is obviously less offensive than the violence that we see endemic in these cities, but I just, you know, like to keep track of all these goon squads and what their particular angle is on these issues.
Well, there's a lot of them, Dan, as you say. I mean, another movement that we're seeing is the people who glue themselves to various surfaces during a basketball game here in Minnesota, Minnesota Timberwolves. You know, a woman runs off into the court and glues herself to the floor. They try to undo her. Recently, I saw some of these protesters glued themselves to a painting, not the famous fresco, but a painting of the Last Supper somewhere around the world.
Right.
So, yeah, I mean, the crazies are out in force, and the most sinister, but those things are bad enough, you know, the deflating tires and gluing yourself to things, but the most sinister is these flash mobs that gather when any conservative tries to go out and eat dinner with his friends and family, and they harass the conservative and anybody else in the vicinity, any other diners. This happened to Brett Kavanaugh the other night, as you know, at Morton's in Washington, D.C., and now the left is putting out bounties. So if you see a conservative justice out in public, quick phone it in, and if the person is still there in 30 minutes so they have time for a mob to assemble, they'll give you $200. So
yeah,
this is beyond sick. I mean, this is truly dangerous.
And they're focusing on D.C., you know, service employees. They want to know if they're in your restaurant or in your retail shop. We're asking them to call. And they're using the platform of Twitter, and I just don't understand why Twitter hasn't shut them down, because they're inciting violence.
Well, they're inciting violence, and it certainly is harassment at a minimum. And Twitter gets all self-righteous, you know, if somebody gets called names on that platform, and they'll censor people for harassment, you know, for saying something that a liberal disagreed with. But when you have actual harassment, the organization of mobs that are at best threatening and menacing, and there's every reason to think that they could turn violent, as long as it's on the left, Twitter turns a blind eye.
You know, the Democrat socialists are having a rough time trying to figure out how to keep it together and stay competitive come November 8th. So we have the make the election a referendum on abortion on demand all 9 months, taxpayer funded, which is their position. Let's behave, as Morton said of those protesters, in a selfish and indecent fashion against Supreme Court justices and anybody in their vicinity. And then you have this too. Let's attack Latino Republicans. The New York Times piece on Myra Flores and other Latina Republican candidates this cycle, the rise of the right wing, the far right wing Latina. Well, Cassie Garcia, who's running in Texas against Henry Cuellar, she's a Republican. She's a Latina. And she had this to say on Tucker Carlson's show about that.
We don't want open borders at all, and that's what the Democrat Party it believes in, and we don't believe in that. We believe in sovereign borders, and so that's why we're going to see more Democrats vote Republican come this November. We're going to see more Democrats walk away.
They got a problem with Latina and Latino voters, and it's showing up in the polling.
Well, they have a huge problem, and I believe, Dan, I think it's going to be a huge November for Republicans, number one. And number two, I think the biggest story of the election is going to be the swing in Hispanic voters. We're seeing that in the polls. We've seen it in some of the results that we've already gotten down in South Texas. And, you know, the most loyal Democratic voters are blacks, and they've been victimized by decades of propaganda. And their votes are pretty sticky. I mean, blacks are swinging to the Republicans, but more slowly. But Latinos in general don't have those decades of propaganda and the same degree of loyalty to the Democrats. Their votes, I think, are a lot easier to swing. And there's nothing about the far left. There's nothing about wokeness, about open borders, about all the nonsense, about abortion, for that matter, that appeals to the vast majority of Hispanic voters. I think we're going to see a huge swing in that demographic to the GOP.
John Hendraker, president of the Center of the American Experiment, contributor and founder of PowerlineBlog.com. PowerlineBlog.com is where you can get John's writings and many other good conservative writers. John, thanks for joining us as always. Appreciate it.
Great to be with you, Dan. Have a good day.
Thank you. And he joined us on our turnkey.pro answer line.
The stories you need to know to start your day. This is Chicago's Morning Answer on AM 560, The Answer. This is Chicago's Morning Answer with Dan Proft and Amy Jacobson on AM 560, The Answer.
Top of the morning, Dan and Amy. So, former President Trump doing one of his signature rallies in Anchorage, Alaska over the weekend. And that was after the news came over the transom that Elon Musk had nixed his bid to buy Twitter. Here's what Trump had to say. Of course, a real opportunity to promote Truth Social, Trump's social media platform, and he took it.
Nah, he's got himself a mess. You know, he said the other day, oh, I've never voted for a Republican. I said, I didn't know that. He told me he voted for me. So he's another bullshit artist, but he's not going to be buying it. He's not going to be buying it, although he might later. Who the hell knows what's going to happen? He's got a pretty rotten contract.
We'll see who the hell knows when we ask Jonathan Honig. He's the Capitalist Pig, founding member of the Capitalist Pig Hedge Fund and Fox News contributor, author of a new textbook of Americanism, The Politics of Ayn Rand. Jonathan, is Elon Musk a bull jive artist, as the president said?
Good morning. Great to be with you, Dan and Amy. Happy Monday. I mean, look, Elon Musk is a colorful character. But the fact of the matter is that this guy figured out how to launch a rocket off of a launch pad, fly it up to space, and then land it right back down exactly. Elon Musk is a one-of-a-kind character, but I don't think he is a bullshit artist, as President Trump has alluded to. He has had success after success in creating real innovation, not just with Tesla, but with many other companies as well, Dan. So look, business is very kind of transitory. I do believe that in this case, Elon, probably like Icarus, flew a little bit close to the sun, threw out a bid for Twitter that was certainly well above what the market was pricing. So Elon might have made a bad trade, but I don't think he's a BS artist. Not every investment is a winner, even for the best businessman. So
well,
what is Trump's
it's just,
better layoff on Elon?
Well, here's the thing. But here's the thing about it. I mean, this is sort of like he took the same approach to Twitter. He took the Dogecoin. He threw something out there and saw what happened. I mean, this is not a private equity deal of this magnitude, and he did no due diligence on the issue of bot accounts and what percentage of Twitter accounts are bot accounts, and he's using this as his way to try to get himself out of the deal. There's something else here besides the fact that, and in part of it is he probably doesn't want to overpay, and Tesla stock is down 24% over the last month, and his economics and the economic climate has changed since he first threw this out there. But he did sort of just throw this out there and troll Twitter and see how this went, and now he's looking maybe for an escape clause and an escape hatch.
I honestly think that we're going to look back at this era much like we look back at maybe the housing boom in 2007 or the tech era in the late 90s and think, what was going on then? I mean, you even left out the kind of the most unbelievable part is that every element of Elon Musk's takeover activities have always had some type of a marijuana tinged, you know, theme about it. Everything is priced in 420 or at 420. And unbelievable type of circumstances. And I think you're right. I mean, the environment has changed. Elon Musk, I think it's pretty obvious, threw out a number for his bid. And as you said, just as much as Dogecoin. Remember that he was in effect pumping that for months and months. And ironically, Dan, the all-time high for that cryptocurrency that Elon loved so much was exactly the time he was on SNL. It has gone, it has dropped, I believe, 70-80% since then. So, look, as the public, I think we just have to be wary. You can't jump on board with any guru, whether it's, you know, Donald Trump or Elon Musk or anyone else. You always have to do your own due diligence, your own evaluation. And Tesla, Twitter, while it's a wonderful company, has been poorly led for years. And perhaps Elon and everyone else is saying this company just isn't worth what other people thought it was.
Well, for God's sake,
he's going to have to pay $1 billion to get out of the contract. Well, Trump at the rally said, I read that contract. He should have never signed that contract.
Trump doesn't know what he's talking about, but Trump is not a partner at Skadden and Arps or Kirkland and Ellis. I mean, just give me a break. You know, let's you know, Jonathan, you make a great point, and I'm glad you opened this door. Like, can we just dispense with the hero worship? On like Donald Trump knows everything. Elon Musk knows everything. Joe Rogan is everything. These are all going to be the heroes of Western civilization. They're not.
Well, yeah, Dan, what's always defined Americanism is their reluctance to follow an authority, follow a leader. Americans have always been defined by that independent, individualistic spirit where, you know, they're going to make up their own minds for what's best for his and her own situation. So, you know, look, that's especially true when it comes to the economy right now. I've been doing this for well over 20 years. I think the economy is tremendously troubled, but it doesn't mean that, you know, you should necessarily just go out and, you know, sell every stock you own and, you know, buy a gun and head for the bunker. It always depends on your own individual circumstance, your own individual context and goals. So, you know, it takes some thinking. It's easy just to follow a blind leader, do whatever the leader says. But, you know, as Americans, we expect to think a little bit better of ourselves. So you really got to think whether it's, as you said, Trump, Biden, or anyone else. What's
well, Trump, Biden, I mean, there's a chasm between those two. I mean, look, at least Trump has done some productive things, unlike Biden in his life. But I mean, this isn't like, this isn't even really a criticism of Trump or Musk or Rogan and their contributions. It's a criticism of just everything they say or do is right as long as they're, you know, they're attacking the right opponent. Just stop. Stop with that. You know, assess things on the merits. I mean, for goodness sakes, the guy has a kid named X-A12. You know, maybe.
It's very common spelling, too, I'm sure.
It's either Michael
or that name.
I mean, just maybe, you know, maybe he's right on some big things. And maybe he's really wrong on some other big things. I don't know. I'm just saying,
what's striking to me, and interesting, Dan, I mean, Musk really hasn't changed. But the economic environment has. I mean, we might have talked 6-8 months ago. This is such a different economic environment than we were. And look, I'm not a Cassandra, but, you know, the markets have had one of the worst 6-month stretches in history. You know, you've talked about this ad infinitum, and the economy is just showing some very, very worrisome signs here. So I think, you know, a lot of folks are looking at deals that they struck 6, 8, 12 months ago, you know, whether it be cryptocurrency or real estate or anything else, and saying, boy, things have changed, and things have changed pretty dramatically. So, I don't think we're headed to plummet here, but I think the market and the economy is in some very, very tenuous moments right now.
There's no way out of this. I mean, the Fed can't do what they did from the Great Recession of 08 to you know, the last 12 months. They can't do it. So there's the only way out, as our friend Jim Perry said on Friday, is to nuke people's brokerage accounts. Isn't that right?
And to nuke our standard of living, our quality of life. I mean, that's what's so frustrating, right, Dan? They would never raise taxes on poor people. The government would never, because that's so, but they'll create the inflation, they'll expand the money supply that hurts all of our standard of living. Economics, as you always, I know you pointed out as well, you and Amy have mentioned, it's about what is unseen. So it's not just our brokerage accounts, or I think the higher prices we're paying for everything these days, not just gas, but everything else. It's all the investments we don't make, all the trips with our families we don't take, the opportunities, the experiences. I think that's what's so frustrating now. And looking back to the 1970s, there's been a lot of comparisons. Look, the Dow basically flatlined for 16 years. It was in a trading range from basically the late 60s to the early 1980s. And that's what my real fear right now is. You know, not so much that the market goes up or down 20%, but we're in a stagnation type of period of really low growth for the economy, not caused by greedy businessmen like Musk, but caused by government in D.C.
Well, now recently you wrote, or an advocate, I don't know if you're an advocate or what, but about how dogs are changing the world, basically that dogs are helping with, you know, experience less crime. More, if you have more dogs in your neighborhood, you have less crime. Can you explain that?
Well, what about maybe that ban for Lori Lightfoot? Should she just release, you know,
release the hounds?
Yeah, yeah. Mr. Burn style. Right, yeah. Yeah, yeah.
Yeah, I mean, it's a fascinating piece of research, Amy, that put out by researchers at Ohio State University, exactly as you said.
The Ohio State University, Mr. Honig. The Ohio State University. We're going to get sued. All right, go ahead.
There's the one and only. Well, in this case, they've done some fascinating research. I think we all kind of knew this. Neighborhoods with more dogs have not just less violent crime, significantly less violent crime. Neighbors tend to be more talkative, more aware, more alert. That leads to demonstrably lower levels of crime. Neighborhoods with more dogs had fewer property crimes, even in places, Dan and Amy, where neighbors weren't necessarily that active with each other and that, you know, interactive with each other. So long story short, screw the alarm system, get a dog, get one for your neighbor, and look for crime to reduce. Well, maybe not in Chicago. We've got better things, bigger things here, but get a dog, reduce crime, probably the cheapest way to fight crime in America.
He is the Capitalist Pig, Jonathan Honig, founding member of the Capitalist Pig Hedge Fund and Fox News contributor, author of A New Textbook of Americanism, The Politics of Ayn Rand. Jonathan, thanks as always.
Great to be on The Answer. Have a good one, guys.
Thank you. And he joined us on our turnkey.pro answer line.
You've made the switch, and it feels so good. You switched to Chicago's Morning Answer on AM 560, The Answer.
Okay. We have to do one of these painful segments because Amy still watches network affiliate newscasts and can't extract herself from that world.
Well, it's just when something like this happens, I think it needs to be played for the world since the world is listening.
Yeah.
In case you missed it, because I'm sure you're big into local news, Albany, New York, or Albany, New York, CBS station, uh-huh. Heather Kovar, she took, you know, well, she was anchoring on Saturday night, 6 o'clock. Now, this isn't the 10 o'clock show. This is the 6 p.m. show.
The
10 o'clock, you know, might go out for dinner and drinks and get over served.
Oh, I see what you're saying.
This is the 6 p.m. news.
You know, the exhibit is open until August, so you can still check that out. Discover Schenectady. You should really check that out. They do so many good things in Schenectady. The leaders there, they are hopeful that that exhibit's going to bring even more events and exhibits to the area in the future. And so moving on tonight is we have to tell you also, you know, like other news that's happening in the area and across the, you know, the area in the nation. Let me tell you about this. A four-year-old girl is actually dead. Another man is clinging to life after shooting in Ohio.
So is that her riffing or does she just have, you know, one of those illiterate 22-year-olds writing for her teleprompter?
No, she's... believe it or not, there was a producer there who actually let her go on air like that. She was slurring her words. She looked overserved. She looked hammered. And she went on, and she got the weatherman's name wrong, all right? But she claims, and she said twice, I work the 6 a.m. shift and the 7 a.m. shift. I'm working a double, and she said it for a second time.
105 degrees in Texas today. I just spoke with my mother. That's what she's dealing with. It's a major heat wave, and it is it's just hitting everywhere. We're so lucky. It's only 80 degrees here. We are really lucky here in the Capital Region. I mean, let me tell you about that. These areas are reaching such areas. I mean, it's Houston, Austin, San Antonio. I mean, they're not expected. It has happened. Like, you don't need us telling you that it's bad. It's like people are being told to, like, stay inside, drink a lot of water. And we are just lucky. This weekend right here is so amazing. Meteorologist Craig Adams is right here. Craig Adams. Why did I say that? Of course, clearly, like, here we're taking a live look over downtown Albany. And of course, just like me, meteorologist Craig Gold is working a double shift. And so he's in. And we've been tracking this. And, you know, we've been talking about just, like, what it's been like. like across the country and the different reasons that why it's so hot. And
so you don't think anything's wrong with her? Or you just don't like this story?
I mean, it sounds like she's like, you know, vamping. I mean, it's no more painful than listening to these segues that these dim-witted teleprompter readers do for every story segment, story block. I want to get the terminology right for all you industry types out there.
Yeah, it's A block, B block, C block, D block.
I don't know. I mean,
well, there was a great deal of public concern of people calling in like, there's something wrong with her. She said, well, she has been suspended. Following this, you know, display.
What, because she stopped reading off the teleprompter?
I don't even know if she knew that she was reading. I don't even know if she knew where she was. But she, if you see her hair, she's disheveled. Like, her hair starts straight, and then towards the end, her hair is a mess, and she's all...
The only thing I took away from that, watching it, as opposed to listening to it, which I'm like, I don't know. It sounds like every other nitwit that reads the news. The only thing I took away with it is the same is what Dennis Miller said about flight attendants about 20 years ago.
What
the hell happened to flight attendants? I was on a flight. These flight attendants need to be carbon dated. That's the only thing I took away from this. What happened? I thought you had to be pretty to read the news off a teleprompter. Apparently not anymore.
Well, that wasn't a good look for her.
Look. It was all right. So you
think, apparently, I think she did it because she was protesting the fact that she had to work a double shift, and she says that she was exhausted.
Where's the family guy? Oh my God, who the hell cares?
Well, you got to pay your dues when you're in smaller markets. Oh my God, suck it up, honey. You're lucky you have a job in the news industry. Really?
Oh my God, who
thank you.
Cash.
Peter Griffin was bored to tears by that. That's why he's late on the draw. You think that was bad? Okay. How about the big guy? How about the president of the United States?
Women are not without electoral or political power. It is noteworthy that the percentage of women who registered to vote and cast a ballot is consistently higher than the percentage of the men who do so. End of quote. Repeat the line.
And then he repeated the line.
Channel 4 News team, I'm Veronica Corningstone.
And I'm Ron Burgundy. Go f*** yourself, San Diego.
I don't know why he's taking out in San Diego. Yeah. I think more about the big guy than some fungible teleprompter reader in Albany. Why don't you, please?
The stories you need to know to start your day. This is Chicago's Morning Answer on AM 560, The Answer. Only the biggest stories, only the biggest guests, and only the biggest opinions. This is AM 560, The Answer.
Top of the morning, Dan and Amy.
Why are you laughing?
Robert Conquest's second law of politics. If an organization is not explicitly conservative, it will trend toward the left. The Thomas Jefferson Foundation has reshaped the experience at Monticello. New York Post reporting on this. The culmination of a 10-year effort to balance the historical record. Our friend Jeffrey Tucker at the Brownson Institute recently did a tour of Monticello. The whole thing has the feel of propaganda and manipulation. People on my tour seemed sad and demoralized. Tucker described his guide as surly and dismissive of Jefferson's accomplishments. For example, he recalled, someone asked if Jefferson had built a machine in the house, and the guide said, nah, he never built anything. He was just a tinkerer.
What?
Wow. Yeah.
Okay.
He designed the house.
Right. That makes him an engineer.
He's a tinker.
He's a carpenter, too.
Nah.
Jesus Christ is a carpenter, too.
He was not only the architect of the house, he was the architect of the University of Virginia. Tinkerer.
He's just tinkering around.
Yeah, he did, you know, he did, yeah, did some, you know.
He dabbled, Dan. It's a hobby.
Minor fixes. Yeah. It goes on. Some of the reactions that the New York Post chronicled from visitors, other than Jeffrey Tucker. The tour guides play besmirchment derby, never missing a chance to defame this brilliant and complex man, said Stephen Owen of Enochville, North Carolina. He wrote on Facebook. Someone else. Oh, yeah. William Bales of Chester, Virginia. Half of the comments on Jefferson were critical. Even my 11-year-old daughter noticed the bias. Reporting from the Post on this. The Post found the grievance has become the predominant theme at Monticello, from the ticket booth in the visitor center, decorated with a contemporary painting of Jefferson's weeping slaves, to its final gift shop display. Not even the president's world-famous music room, an octagonal space carefully restored to its 18th-century grandeur and decorated with Gilbert Stuart's original presidential portrait and classic gold bust, is safe from revisionist disapproval. A grim modern painting of a faceless figure with a matte black head now looms over the room, positioned so that it directly confronts visitors as they enter the mansion. That 4x5 foot work was a new addition to the Monticello collection, commissioned in honor of Juneteenth last month. Yeah, they never, and it just goes on and on. You can get the details, and it goes on and on to present a one-sided view of Jefferson. Well, where do they get this? Well, how about at your school, your kid's school? Because that's where it's happening. You know, we're all on one big college campus now. Every aspect of life. We lament what's happening on college campuses, but we're offering laments that are two decades, three decades late. How about your kids' K through 12 schools? York High School got this audio sent to us. York High School there in Leafy Elmhurst. A couple of teachers there. I mean, one is speaking, and she references two teachers. I'm not precisely sure which one is the teacher who's speaking to her class, but this was recorded in her class, where she talks about Jefferson and the assignment related to Jefferson and how she approaches Jefferson versus how people who are critical of her approach Jefferson. Take a listen. And also, please note the tenor of her comments.
We gave you his writing so that you could see his ideology. He wrote the stuff. I'm not making this up. Okay? But the problem is, some people, they tell little 5'2", Miss Deloria and Miss DiTommaso, you better keep those facts locked up in the closet. We don't want our kids to know that. I want to ask you why. When we think about values, what are the values that are in the words? And what are the values in the secret facts? Those things do not want to coexist, right? There's a problem there. And we saw a problem in the founding. And if we can understand that there was a problem then, we A, think of ourselves a little bit differently when we look in the mirror and say, oh, this guy is representative of all of us that are citizens of this country. We start to ask some questions, like if it wasn't true then, when did it become true, right? When were we living up to this? And that threatens certain values. There is a threat, okay? That threat, like, is the reason people do not want this story told, because it imperils a set of values that are in conflict with those promises. Period. That is a fact. Okay? That is what we're asking you in the paper to deal with and reconcile. And to the extent that you know things about conversations going on in the world or the way our government is run, I'm not asking you to demonstrate something that I didn't teach you. So I'm not going to hold you accountable to that. But think about what you already know. Think about what you understand about those values being in tension, and about when at York High School we say, here's the facts, here's a broad story, and here's how the reality of this country coming to being looked, and like what we've been trying to work towards ever since. And it's up to you to decide if we've gotten there or not, okay? But like, that's kind of what we're asking you to reckon with.
And 312-642-5600, turnkey.pro answer line, 646-36-DA, turnkey.pro text line. You know, that sounds in part like all, you know, fair and square. The good, the bad, and the ugly. You know, reconcile the ideals laid out in the founding documents with how imperfect those ideals were abided from the nation's founding to present. Sure. problem is it starts from this straw man premise. Some people don't want you to know that Thomas Jefferson owned slaves, is essentially what she's saying. And that's just not true. I mean, again, point to any conservative anywhere, any parent anywhere who showed up at a school board meeting to address the critical race theory curriculum, who said, you're not allowed to say George Washington or Thomas Jefferson or any of the founding fathers owned slaves. We can't teach that. We have to present a sanitized version of who these men were who founded this nation. No one. I don't think that it exists. Present anyone. Anyone. It's a lie. This is a solution in search of a problem. Well, it's an ideology presented as a solution. And that whole riff, some people don't want, you know, Miss Deloria and Miss DiTommaso, I don't know who's who, to tell you these things. It's absurd. It's absurd. When you hear somebody say something like that, you know a couple of things. One, you know they're a identitarian hack, not an educator. And two, you know that they're in the business of trying to indoctrinate while, you know, posturing all the right phrases. They have to create an enemy that doesn't exist, somebody that they're battling in a righteous manner in order to sell what they're asking you to believe. Because there just isn't any, the argument that she is suggesting is being made is not being made. So she is, you know, presenting false information as the way to get her students to believe a very narrow, hyper-politicized, from an identitarian perspective, which is just the latest iteration of Marxism, version of our founding, and that should inform what they think about our country today. You know, it's a little bit more subtle here than in some places, but the approach is the same. I mean, or I should say the approach, and it's a little, the mission is the same. Where she's trying to take the students is the same. Parents are telling Miss Deloria and Miss DiTommaso that you can't say Jefferson owned slaves. You can't present any information that would cast Jefferson in a negative or questionable light. Okay, well, name the parents. Name them. And that's what you should always do when you show up to the school board meeting at York. Name it. Who is it? Who is it that doesn't want you to teach the complete history of Jefferson, of the nation's founding, of the founding fathers, of the institution of slavery, of Jim Crow laws, of the civil rights movement? In the context of the global slave trade, in the context of slavery that still exists in parts of this world, please see Communist China, for example. I mean, all of the texture you want to add, give us who is making the argument against that, and specifically what you say their argument is. Who are these white supremacists afoot in the hallowed halls of York High School? Let's hear about them. Tom in his car, you're in Chicago's Morning Answer.
Hi, I tried hard to listen to her. I couldn't hardly understand what she was saying because she was so shrill. And she just sounded like a raving lunatic.
Well, thanks for the call, Tom. I mean, that's why I said I want, you know, listen to the tone and the tenor. You know, it's, everything is like, this is what I'm doing. Okay. Like she's under siege. You're not under siege. Except to the extent that some people and some parents maybe at York have figured out your game and they're questioning it or being critical of it to the administration or at a school board meeting. I don't know. She's enough on people's radar that somebody recorded this and got it to me. So that tells you something. Be interested if we have any York parents out there that want to add more color.
312-642-5600.
Mike in Madison, Wisconsin.
Good morning, Dan and Amy. The term for what she's doing is virtue signaling. She is better than the founding fathers. She wouldn't have had slaves. She would have cured cancer. Drinking water would have been purified. Everything would have been great if only she and people like her had run the nation back then.
Yeah, it's a great point, Mike. Everybody on the left is William Wilberforce. Right? Exactly. You know, exactly right. And this is not to paper over gruesome behavior by past generations of Americans of all stripes and all different manifestations, including the founders and including slavery. It's not to paper over it at all, but right. Everybody today in 2022 America on the left is a direct descendant of William Wilberforce. And, you know, the courage they show today, certainly they would have shown had they been around in, you know, the late 1700s. Right. Right. Because that's really the value you see shining through these people is moral and political courage. As opposed to throwing in with a ill-tempered mob, which is what they actually do. Being, they would have been men and women of scholarship. They were, oh, by the way, the founders and informed their opposition to slavery, the abolitionists, Christians. Uh-oh.
Oh, no.
Would you have been one of those? Yeah. Yeah. They would have all been Christian soldiers fighting to eradicate institutions they knew were immoral and illegitimate, like the slave trade, like slavery and the slave trade, like William Wilberforce did. Right. Mm-hmm. Yeah. Okay. Holly in St. Louis.
Hey, good morning, you two. Breaking news. Yes. Teachers are not that sharp. So I worked at Illinois State University, and I was trying to get some kids in to take the ACT that was offered at Illinois State, and it was full early. And I said to the person running the program, why is it full? And they said, oh, because those are all kids who are sophomores at ISU trying to get into the College of Ed, and they won't accept you without a 21 on your ACT. Oh. And they have to keep taking the ACT till they get a 21 so they can get accepted into the College of Ed. And so there
21,
you have it.
Huh? Yeah, 21.
And that's after 2 years of college. So
mm-hmm. Good score.
Yeah. They're not that sharp. Yeah.
Yeah. Thanks, Holly. Charlie Wheeling.
Well, hi, Dan. Hi, Amy. I just wanted to say that for at least 20 years, I've given a small amount of money each year to the Washington Vernon. What is it called?
Mount Vernon
Foundation and the Jefferson Monticello Foundation. And just this past year, the newsletters are completely, it's like they're all woke. So I stopped giving, and I wrote them a letter. I put it in the envelope and sent it back. I can't give you any more donations until you go back to the way you used to be. No, it's so demoralizing. You would think that he did a couple good things, and the rest of his life was just enslaving people.
Yeah.
It's very sad, very sad. I can't give him any more money.
Yeah, thanks for the call, Charlie. Appreciate that. Yeah, it's Thomas.
Back with your pocketbook.
Yeah, Thomas Jefferson. You know, he was a tinkerer and a slave owner. Tinkered around the
Dabbled.
House. Yeah, sort of a homebody, home improvement projects, and he owned slaves. Yeah. That's the story on Thomas Jefferson. Deborah, Arlington Heights.
Good morning. Yeah, this is just good old fashioned gaslighting, and. I think that if people really wanted to solve the problems, it seems more to me like people just want to get even instead of fixing problems. You're just going to demonize a group of people and try to get even instead of making things better, because all that's happening is race baiting and divisiveness.
Thanks, Deborah. Kevin in Austin, Texas, that is.
Yeah, people like her are working hard to get people that she agrees with elected to school boards. So that's why people who are listening to this show need to get on the other side of it and work hard to get people who agree with you to get elected to school boards and state rep and the rest of it.
Amen to that. Thanks, Kevin.
Connect with Dan and Amy using the AM 560 mobile app. Download it today at 560theanswer.com/mobile.
Thanks for listening to Chicago's Morning Answer podcast, sponsored by Signature Bank. Signature Bank takes pride in helping customers grow their business and provide unmatched banking expertise, custom financial solutions, and the industry's best technology. So whether you're a business looking for a deposit relationship or needs a ready source of financing, Signature Bank is the right bank for you. Call today at 773-467-5600 to hear how Signature Bank can help your business grow and thrive. Member FDIC, Equal Housing Lender.